In March, we're airing programs that were rated the best last year, and today's program is one of them.
And I can get up in the morning and run for 10 miles and come back, and I feel like I can conquer anything, and I am able to do what God asked me to do. And it's affected my spiritual life, and it's affected my emotional life. It hasn't affected my speech.
Today on Focus on the Family, Ken Davis shares a pretty radical change that he made in his life, and you're going to be inspired. Your host is Focus President Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, we left our listeners with a cliffhanger at the end of our program last time. We said that Ken had a midlife revelation after someone took his picture at the beach.
Yeah, don't do that to me, please. I can imagine what that was.
Today, we're going to hear that story, and more importantly, what Ken did about it.
Ken is the president of Dynamic Communications International and teaches his rather amazing speaking skills to others. And here now is Ken Davis on today's edition of Focus on the Family.
We ought to be more like dogs. A dog is a man's best friend. A dog is a child's best friend. Why? Because they're filled with joy. Dogs are filled with joy. You can be gone 3 minutes. 3 hours, 3 days, doesn't matter. You come back. That dog is right at the door. He can smell you. He's right at the crack where he can sniff, and that is my master. Whoa! He stinks. I love my master. Whoa, whoa. And then you open the door and he goes, hi, ho, whoa, ho, hello! Come and see what I have done. Who has a Doberman? Where are you? Oh, Doberman, that's a dog. Dog, you can't put up a sign in your yard. This property protected by Chihuahua. Yeah, and no, don't even think about 4 French poodles. We have 4. I have to say just for a second to my friends who are 65, you're not dead yet. But I was acting like it. I was acting like it. God isn't through with you yet. This life is not a waiting room for death. I have another author, one of my favorites, who quoted something on this. His name is Paul. He was writing to some of his friends in a letter called Philippians, and he said this, this has changed my life. It has changed the focus of my life. I look at it every single day. Paul said, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. He was not talking about, well, when I die, I would like to be raised from the dead. He was talking partly about that, but he was specifically talking about knowing the power of God's resurrection in his life now. I told you, I'm a believer. I am a follower of Christ. I say that to tell you this, that if Christ is not raised from the dead, then I and every person who claims to be a follower of him is a fool. Paul told us that too. But if he is raised from the dead, then there is the possibility that we can know the power of that kind of resurrection, the power that overcomes death, and we might be able to taste a little of it now. I want that. There was another sign of life that came to me. I had let my body go. I had let my morals go. I had let my spiritual life fade into some kind of zombie-like existence. I was coasting. I'm looking at less years left than I have behind me, and I'd started to coast. I was on a beach one day with my grandchild, my granddaughter, and someone took a picture that shocked me into reality physically. Holding the hand of a little girl who, if she had been 100 yards from shore and called for my help, I couldn't have helped her. I could not have helped her. There was nothing I could do. I had let every part of my life slip. And if you face what I was facing now, this is not a condemnation of you. I'm telling you that physically, what we allow to happen to us physically affects so many other areas of life. And this became an example of what I could be. When I saw that picture, I was so embarrassed. I remember people on the beach yelling, "Move! We want to see the ocean." Environmentalists pouring water on me, trying to push me back into the water. I decided I didn't want to live like that anymore. And I found a sign of life in a weird place called discipline. We think of discipline as a bad thing, like someone beating the daylights out of you. That's not discipline. I'm talking about the kind of discipline where you decide that you will do the work to live. The discipline that a pianist takes when they do hours of training so that they can play beautifully. And when they want to play with their heart, it's available because they know the basics. The discipline that it takes to get out of this kind of a dead place that I was, physically. I started setting goals for myself that I had to match. I signed up for a triathlon. 64 at the time. I signed up for a triathlon. Now, not the Ironman, not the stuff people do where they pass away. I did more like a styrofoam person. You know, where you run from the bed to the bathroom and fill up the bathtub and then pull the plug and fight against the current. Go into the basement, pump up a bicycle tire, and then go back to bed. I signed up for a sprint triathlon, and I began training for that triathlon. Began to run and to walk. It was painful. First time I ran, I made it maybe a mile. I don't remember how far I made it. Maybe a couple of blocks. Took my cell phone out, called my wife and said, "Come and get me. Can't go any further than this." But the next morning I got up again and I did it again. And the next morning again. And pretty soon I was running 2 miles and then 8 miles and then 10 miles. And I discovered it only happened from discipline. But guess what? The discipline, I'm going to tell you, it's not hard after a while to run 10 miles. It's not hard to run 8 miles for me. Do you know what's hard for me? To get out of bed. If this is the truth, if I make it to the door and close the door, whatever I have planned to do is over in just a little while. I rode bike because that's part of a triathlon. I live in Tennessee. There's nothing but hills in Tennessee. Nothing but hills. Couldn't make it up the hills. Hello, come and get me. And then I decided I'm not calling anyone anymore. If I have to make it up the hill, I will walk up the hill. And I walked up the hill. And then finally I was riding up the hill. And then pretty soon I was riding up the hill and coming down at 51 miles an hour and then riding back up again so that I could do it again. There's a saying, I see this ad on TV, a body in motion tends to stay in motion. I want to tell you the truth, a body at rest tends to rest in peace. In our culture, at the age 45, the quality of life begins to decay. At 45, and by the time we reach age 60, 65, most people spend from those last 5 or 10 years up to about 70, totally incapacitated, living a minimum quality of life. And I found out in my research that if you are willing to discipline yourself to 1 hour, 45 minutes to an hour, doesn't matter, where your heart rate is up in that aerobic range, and then 2 or 3 times you do something we never do because it's hard, we push ourselves to where it's almost to the limit, just for a little while, just to get our heart pumping, just to remind our body, we're still alive, we're not laying down. If you do that, from age 45 to about age 65, you can increase the quality of your life. And I can get up in the morning and run for 10 miles and come back, and I feel like I can conquer anything. And I am able to do what God asked me to do. And it's affected my spiritual life, and it's affected my emotional life. Hasn't affected my speech. I have a friend who says, it's worth doing something poorly the first time, just to get started. And when you fail at it, or when it doesn't work right, you'll learn how to make it better the next time. I saw another sign of life in my family. I don't think there's anything that makes life worth living more than love. Nothing. These are my three fairy granddaughters. Are they not beautiful? That's Kylie and JJ and Lexi, my fairy granddaughters. Do you remember I told you I won't let anybody lie to me? Now I'm going to tell you the truth. Look at me, they are fairies. I would not lie to you, they have wings. When I come into the house, they hear my voice and they come running from all over the house and their feet leave the ground. Because they are flying. I would not lie to you. And they wrap skinny little arms around my neck and they whisper in my ear the words I was born to hear. I love you, Grandpa. This little girl's name is Jaden. Jaden is my princess. We have a connection. It doesn't matter whether we are plowing or whether we are cutting down trees or hiking through mud. Jaden's always wearing her sparkly princess shoes and her little princess clothes. Everything has to match. She and her three sisters and my wife went into the mountains, 10,500 feet, camping with these beautiful children. Oh, they had a marvelous time. They loved the campfire. Stick little sticks into the campfire until they start on fire, and then wave them in the air until it's just a red glowing thing, and then poke your sister with that, and then stick it back in and wave it in the air until finally they couldn't keep their eyes open anymore. And so we tucked them into their sleeping bags, popped up in the morning when the sun rose. Can we have a fire again? All the wood is gone, and so we went hunting for wood. Little Jaden, I did not want little Jaden to get hurt. And so as we crossed this little logging road that was near our campsite, I said to Jaden, see, this stick was about the size of this. I said, take this to your grandmother. And she took it. She was so proud. I can still see her dragging it across the road. And when she was almost to the campsite, we turned to get the bigger stuff that would hurt her. That was the last we saw of Jaden. Evidently, what happened was Jaden got almost to her grandmother, and then she decided, you know, I would rather be with my grandfather. And so she turned around and started to find us and wandered into the wilderness at 10,500 feet. She was gone for 3.5 hours. We were out of our minds. Let me tell you what happens. In the first hour or so, you think, maybe on the next breath of wind, I will hear her voice. As you run as fast and far as you can run and call her name in every direction you can possibly go, you think, maybe I'll see her now standing by this tree. Maybe she'll be where this road runs out. Maybe she's, oh, I hope she's not down by the river. But after about 2.5 hours, you begin to brace yourself for the very worst. They had a marvelous rescue team that came because we found a forest ranger and he called them and they were there just so quickly. They lined up a mile above the campsite to search downhill because children do not go uphill. They go the easy route, downhill. In the meantime, I had searched the river and thanking God that she was not there. And then I had to search the swamp. There's just this small swampy area filled with potholes and brush that fights your every move. And I prayed, don't let her be in here. Don't let her be in here. And I was making my way through that swampy area when I stumbled and I fell in a small pool of water, maybe 1.5 feet deep. I had run for 3 hours. I had called for 3 hours. I could not get up I could not move. My strength was gone. My voice was gone. And on my hands and knees, I prayed to God that day, "Dear God, please, God, take my career. You can have it. Take my savings. Take it. God, take my house. Take them." And finally, the final thing I said from my knees to myself, because my voice would not carry anything, was, "God, take my life. Take me. But please bring this baby back." I didn't know it, but at about that moment, a teacher, they were going up into the mountains to hike, and they came across a beautiful little blonde girl sitting on a rock where the roads run out and only wilderness begins. And the teacher said, "This can't be right. That's why she's a teacher." And she walked up to my little Jade and she said, "Honey, are you okay?" And she said, Jaden said to her, "I cannot talk to you." And the teacher said, "I am not a stranger. I am a teacher." And she said, Jaden said, "Well, okay then. My grandpa is lost." I knew nothing about this. I finally was able to regain my feet and stumble back into camp. And as I stumbled into our little campsite, the radio on the forestry guy's belt came to life with these words: "We have found Jaden. She is alive and well." And I collapsed again. What a great, great end. What a wonderful thing. I remember seeing her little blonde hair flying in the wind as they brought her back on an ATV. I remember the reunion, and I particularly remember because this wonderful search and rescue team sent me a picture of it. By the way, JJ had walked 2.5 miles straight up the mountain. She was 1.5 miles beyond where they were lined up to search downhill for her. I got weird kids. She came back and I grabbed her hands. This was a moment of change in my life. I said to her, I could only whisper it, but I said, "I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you." It's the only words that would come out of my mouth. And suddenly it hit me. That's how God feels about me. That's how he feels when a child finally comes to him after being lost. That's how he feels when someone is living the dead life of a zombie when they should know better and suddenly decide to live fully alive. We think of God as this person who doesn't enjoy laughter and fun, and we walk around sometimes acting like, who would want to be a follower of Jesus? And instead, he loves us. He loves us. And that changed me, except for one thing. I had another question that I struggled with for almost a year. This was the question: what if? Would I be here tonight if it had been a different outcome? And I ran that through my head, and it tumbled around in my brain, and I thought about it, and I asked God about it. And last year, last August, I went up to that area to hunt again, and I came across this site. I came around a corner, and I lost it again. This is the ribbon they tied on the tree, where they asked me to show where we had last seen Jaden. And it was like all of what I had thought about came to a conclusion. If Jaden had not come back to me, the only hope that I would have, the only hope that I would have to go on, my only faith, the only thing that would make me want to continue, is a faith that knows that God loved this little girl more than I do, and that she was with him. My hope for my grandchildren is that someday, when the roles have been reversed and I'm the one who has wings, and I hear their little voices at the gate, that it is I who will fly to them and gather them to myself and say, welcome home, little ones. That's our hope. It was the hope of people I've met through the years as I've talked about this issue, who have had tragedy like you cannot believe, who said to me, if we'd have thought beforehand about this, we couldn't handle it. But when the time came, God gave us hope to live fully alive. Most of those people today have dedicated their lives to helping other people going through those situations. I am not the same man that I was 2 years ago. Half of me's gone. I am not the same man that I was a few years ago. I'm not coasting. I'm not retired. I'm retreaded. And watch out, because I got whatever time I got left to live fully alive and glorify the God that created me. Good night.
A very thoughtful perspective there on life and what it means to live fully alive from our speaker today, Ken Davis, on Focus on the Family. And Jim, that story about his granddaughter, Jaden, lost in the forest, oh golly, that grips me, especially since as a family, we've been out camping and we've misplaced a child or two from time to time, just for a moment.
Well, we've done it too, John, so I'm calling the kettle black, I guess. You know, I think all of us as parents have had those moments when we think we've lost our child or grandchild, and fear absolutely grips our hearts. And I love the point Ken was making there. Did you notice he spent 3 hours running all over that mountain looking for Jaden? And by his own admission, before Ken got into shape, he couldn't have helped a child 100 yards from the shore of the beach at that time. That's a dramatic example and just one of many reasons why each of us need to consider our level of fitness and maybe kick it up a notch, because you never know when you might need to help save a family member from danger, and it's going to require your strength. Not to mention the side benefits of just being healthier. Mm-hmm. And so, John, you're in good shape. What's your secret?
Well, genes, for one. That helps a lot. And then I do try to work out every day.
Wearing jeans help you stay in shape? I've been wearing jeans all my life.
I was talking of genetics, Jim. Genetic genes. Anyway, between the genes that I've been blessed with, the genetics,
yes,
and working out 3 or 4 times a week, I think I do probably stay in shape a fair bit here.
You certainly do. You got a wonderful perspective. And
a runner's body.
A runner's body, yeah. Not a football body like me. It convicts me a little bit. I've got to do a better job. Hey, here's a great idea. What about taking a walk as a family? That's something we try to do. Our mailbox is about a mile away from our house. So. Seriously. During the summer, it's a nice little walk. Not so good in the winter when you're in 4 feet of snow trying to get to your mailbox. But it's a great way to have conversation, which mm-hmm. Jean loves. Yeah. And then, for her and I to lose a few calories, probably. God really did design our bodies for activity. And the more you move, if you start slowly and work up gradually, the better you're going to feel. So often when I do a physical, that's what my doctor's telling me. Just move a lot and eat less.
It sounds easy.
Yeah. But it probably is a lot easier than we make it. You've heard the saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. And as you get older, man, is that really true? You need to find some kind of aerobic activity to keep your heart muscle strong, and then add some weight-bearing exercise to keep your bones and muscles strong as well. So let me encourage you and myself, if your doctor says it's safe for you to exercise, go take a walk today. Mm.
Well, that's something that Dina and I really enjoy doing during the summer, especially now that the kids are older. We can take a walk around the block or around the neighborhood after dinner. It's a great time to connect. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
If that message tugged at your heartstrings and made you think, hey, I could be living life more fully, then why not start today? I'm right there with Jim on the importance of taking care of our bodies. Let's get moving, stay active, and use these amazing bodies the way God designed them, because life's too short to sit on the sidelines. The resource we're recommending today is a book by Valerie Burton called Start Here. It's never too late to learn that being stuck doesn't mean you have to stay stuck. Change happens one action at a time, one day at a time. You can order by giving us a call on 031-716-3300 or when you visit safamily.co.za. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.